And welcome again, dear listeners, to Food Conversations Season 7. Before we begin, we must not forget that we are living and working on Shkrepakulu, the ancestral, unceded, and actually stolen lands of the Shkrepmek people. And it's clear that doing everything we can to resolve this situation is an important and necessary responsibility for every one of us. Now today we have brought into the studio two people who play central roles in the workings of Askew's Foods, which is, as listeners are aware and we are happy to say, the sponsor of Food Conversations. And those two people are Dave Wallace, operations manager for four out of Askew's five stores, and Mike Medwin, produce coordinator for Askew's Foods. We're going to talk to these two experienced food executives about what's going on in the food scene in this part of the world, a scene that they are in touch with on a daily basis. So welcome to Food Conversations, Dave and Mike.
Good morning.
Morning. Thanks, Warren.
Good to have you here. We're going to have an interesting show for listeners because we've seen how you guys have a finger on the pulse of what the food scene is like in this part of the world. And that's what we're all about, and food sovereignty is what we're focused on, and food security, and that's a preoccupation for you as well. Now, Dave, you've been on the show and shared your expertise with us a couple of times already, but today we have you with us, Mike, with your deep knowledge of produce, which plays a very important role in the especially in the fresh food scene in this area, and in fact, everywhere, if we want to get right down to it. Now, both of you have a long history with Askew's. Dave, you started working with Askew's when you were a teenager. Why don't you remind listeners of your long association and of course, your association with this whole area from being a kid?
Oh, I think it was 1983. I was 14 or 15. I can't remember exactly when I started working with Askew's Foods in Armstrong. And I've lived in Armstrong since 1975. My parents had a large hog farm in Armstrong.
And it went through the 1980 meltdown, which was just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Yeah.
So you talk about your local food sources, and that was a big stop, was losing all the hog farms in BC for the most part, you know, the large operations back in the early 80s.
Yeah. A lot of people took a deep dive into difficulty.
Yes.
Yeah. Mike?
Yes.
I know you've been working with Askew's for a long time. When did you actually start?
I started I started basically in 82. Uh-huh. And I was hired as a grocery clerk back then. Progressed on for about 6 years in the grocery. Was downtown and set up pricing and stuff like that. Sure. I then was promoted over to the produce department when the store manager retired and the produce manager moved on. So I was being in there for probably over 30 years with produce. And I mean, anybody you talk to that's in produce departments, that is the department to be in because you can put a can of beans on a shelf, but when it comes to produce, I mean, it's living and it needs lots of work.
Dave, settle down, Dave.
We'll talk later. But
I mean, and it's interesting because it changes every single day.
And you're living with, you're working with living food.
Living food. Yeah. You have, you get it in, you have about 3 days to move and you get stuff going. So you got to be a little creative.
Yeah.
I then moved to Uptown where we set up that produce department. It was I called it my baby because it was gorgeous to have that much space and being able to do stuff.
So, and on that note, how much bigger did the space get there? I mean, I know it's
probably three times as big as downtown.
Oh, my goodness.
So as far as lineal feet and square foot and that, it was a blessing. Most produce managers would die for it because you can do so much more. Because usually you'll find that war goes on between grocery and produce all the time.
And the back end of the store is embedded in...
Underneath the ground, yes.
And so you have a big cool-off.
Big area. Cooler in there and a lot of workspace, lots of storage space. So, it goes, that underneath goes just about to the sidewalk, I believe.
Pretty much the back alley in the warehouse goes right down the whole back of the store, and it's all underneath the shrubs right up to the sidewalk walking in
it's,
behind.
It's a pretty impressive space. I've gone past the sign that says employees only a couple of times now.
Come on in anytime.
It's huge.
The other nice thing about that store is kind of unique is I don't believe there's too many 90-degree corners.
No, it does make a very interesting space, you know, instead of this kind of totally square thing. It's an interesting space. Now, I remember when the building was being put in place and actually attended, I think, the opening ceremony. And a lot of the materials in the store are also sort of found. The ceiling is made out of recovered pine beetle wood. And the fact that it's embedded, it's sort of bermed into the soil, is adapted to the shape of the land, too.
Yes, and the floors are, you know, they're all in floor heating.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's another concept, and it gets basically recycled through their pumps system and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's very carbon footprint, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, all the heat for the brine that goes through the in-floor heating is recovered from our refrigeration system. As you know, behind your fridge, you feel hot air coming.
Yes.
That is reclaimed to heat the building. Underneath the parking lot is, I don't know how many, 1,000-liter tank where all the runoff from the property is fed back in to feed the water the plant.
I was happened to be at City Hall when the architect who was doing the design work was describing what had been done. And at the same time, the shopping mall on the Delta was being constructed, which was very much, you know, your plain vanilla square cement block building. Mm-hmm. And then the architect was describing what was going on in the new Askew store, and it was almost like a different planet.
It was ahead of its time.
It was ahead of its time. Yeah. Well, it's certainly ahead of its time for construction here, because people are not yet required, when you build residential homes, you don't have to go through the kind of thoughtful planning that the architect did for this building. It was really quite, you know, it was a leap forward in terms of thoughtful design. Now, before we get into some of the other details of what's going on, I did a little research and I found an article in the Salmonar Observer. And I'm just going to read some of the material in this article. It starts off by saying, Salmonar consumers might be experiencing pain in their pocketbook when it comes to filling their grocery carts. The price of many types of produce is exceptionally high at the moment due to a combination of factors, primarily poor weather, low Canadian dollar, and the high cost of shipping. You are out on the floor and you are hearing and seeing the customers staring at the prices, and they are traumatized, says Askew's Uptown Produce Manager, Mike Medwood. They really just can't understand it. Prices of items like cauliflower, celery, broccoli, leafy salad greens, green onions, and herbs like cilantro and parsley, among the highest grocery stores have ever seen. The growers plan months in advance to schedule our crops, but they can't count on Mother Nature, says Medwood, who notes drought conditions followed by El Nino-influenced heavy rains have resulted in widespread flooding of fields. Now, there's more to the article, but Mike, this really sounds like, you know, deja vu today, deja vu all over again, here as a famous baseball catcher once said. When I read that and you hear your words and you think of what you're dealing with now, why don't you do a little compare and contrast then and now, and what's changed or what hasn't changed?
Basically, what you have said on there is exactly today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard world. Mother Nature does play a key role in that. And when she's mad, we pay for it.
Yeah.
And that is one of the biggest reasons for produce pricing. Trucking is a huge issue right now. I mean, to get stuff up here is really a challenge. I mean, the Mexican-U.S. border is chaos. We have cartel out there robbing these Mexicans, and actually there has been
killing them
also, yes. So, I mean, you look at a load of lemons, for example, or whatever, I mean, you're 24 skids, 49 boxes on a skid. These guys are getting $40 to $50 a box. Better than drugs.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And frightening because of the lengths that people will go to or are able to go to.
Yes.
in order to get them.
So these guys are getting these orders done up, and they're supposed to be coming up, and then they get robbed and no supply. So then you get supply and demand, and people still want a lemon, but if it's not available, they're willing to pay. And that's why you get high prices.
And some of them come from a long way away.
A long ways away, yeah.
I heard something about Spain. They're getting stuck.
Peppers right now, because the tradition is that hot houses are all basically done, so they're still growing. So Spain is supplying us peppers right now. You come to Spain and then Holland, and then you'll start coming into the States again. And then once the greenhouses start up down on the coast, then we'll be back on track again. But
Dave, yeah. what do you think when you heard what was being said in 2016? What does that conjure up?
I almost want to say they haven't seen anything yet with what we know that we experienced in the last 2 years with price increases.
Yeah.
It's speaking with our ad coordinator this morning before the show. Mm-hmm. And we discussed how we're still seeing price increases, but they're a lot more moderate. Mm. But over the last year, that big jump that just terrified everybody, you know, that was probably a bigger shock than the article you're reading from 2016.
Yeah. So it's even more extreme now.
It was to where we are now. And so now we've seen these prices for a year. We're still not happy with them by any means, but the increases we are seeing now are much more moderate. It's mostly availability is the concern right now.
Yes. Yeah. Especially, there were shipping lines not available.
Yeah.
Back then in the article, I didn't read it, but it notes that your sourcing, Mike, was from Florida, Arizona, and California.
California. That's yes.
Have there been changes in that? I understand when we were talking before the show that a lot of it's coming from California and, of course, Mexico as well. Has it shifted sort of to this side of the continent? Or, I mean, I know it's opportunistic when you run out of everything, you have to go where you can find it. But is there movement towards closer to home, even a little bit closer to home?
Yeah, being you saying that is we have a possibility that's going to be good for our community, I believe. There's been some new breakthroughs in hydroponics and aeroponics. Fortunately enough, Tappan Valley Produce.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the local people, because there are some pretty pretty ambitious and creative projects coming up.
Tappan Valley is out by the fuse plant and just outside of Salmon Arm. And what they're growing right now is they have strawberries coming on. They are online. We're hoping by probably the end of next week or beginning of the following week of having them in our stores. They are aeroponic grown.
Okay, for our humble listeners, let's talk about aeroponics, because it's hydroponics with a difference.
That's correct. So aeroponics, as far as I understand, because they do have a real excellent webpage that you can, if a person's interested, can go on it and look. They meet the people that are there. They meet the equipment they've used. Aeroponics is basically a misting system that feeds your plants from the top coming down. Hydroponics is basically in the ground watering the roots so that it grows up. So that's the difference. They're both excellent. They're both good in nutrition. And I'm looking really forward to getting on board, because it is going to be great for Salmon Arm and the area, being that we will have a local produced strawberry 365 days a year, which, hey, we know what that's all about.
We do. Knowing strawberries, I know what you're talking about. Remind listeners, I'm speaking with Dave Wallace, operations manager, and Mike Medwid, produce coordinator from Askew's Foods. Now, it's interesting when you're talking about this very ambitious project to grow in a new way, that about 3 or 4 years ago, when cannabis first became legal,
correct,
a lot of people invested in cannabis, but not because they were interested in cannabis as a plant, but because they were interested in money as something you put in your pocket. What I sense about this project with Tappan Valley Produce is that they're thinking, first of all, that people need food more than they need pot.
Great.
But also that they're thinking about the future, which is that we have to be more ambitious, more more imaginative in how we grow food so that we have protection against the kind of climate disturbances that, as you pointed out, Dave, are becoming much more prominent and playing a bigger role in all of our lives. Do you, when you talk to them, do you sense that they're sort of forward-thinking people?
Yes, very much so. They're anticipating big growth. They're experimenting with different stuff, cucumbers, peppers, mm-hmm. you know, our vital stuff that we miss during the winter time. Mm-hmm. And this is what they're going on. I mean,
and we can't afford to get them from Spain. Well, you know,
that's why the price reflects it. That's for
sure. Yeah, yeah.
The other one is Green Lion out of Armstrong.
Sure.
Which is another grower. They grow green leaf and butter leaf. And I mean,
in these very special container,
they're called a living clam. Yes,
yes, so a living clam.
Your root is in the bottom of the clam. You can actually have water in the bottom, which will keep your plant. Yeah. That butter leaf, no word of a lie, will last probably a good two and a half weeks in your fridge.
Yeah. So it's just so fresh.
It's just that fresh, and it just holds the stuff. I mean, unlike a U.S. product, right?
Yeah.
So you know, it's watered by channels and stuff like that. This stuff is more from above, so mm-hmm. it's going to be sweeter. It's going to taste better. And I mean, again, you're talking Armstrong, local.
Indeed, the fossil fuel production to get it to the store is very correct. Minimal. Dave, you've been doing this for a long time, as the listeners all now know. What do you see this pattern of ambitious, creative, and thoughtful people, but not, you know, into some product that's like a hula hoop or a pet rock. This is something that really has a central role in people's life, making a fresh food supply available. What do you think when you see this happen?
I'm loving it. I'm also really enjoying the communication. They're local, whether it's the one in Armstrong or
them.
Tappan Valley Produce. We met with them last week, Mike. And they're reaching out to us saying, what would you like us to grow and when?
And you're saying, my goodness, I've never heard that before.
Well, yeah. See, Mike and the other produce managers, you know, we get together and we find out when is it a challenge to get a certain product like a long English or a tomato on the vine, or we even talked about cherry tomatoes, I believe. Yeah. And when we don't have that local supply in the typical growing times of the North Okanagan Shuswap, it's great that we're able to just reach out with a phone call. I don't think Mike can get a hold of Spain and tell them.
How's your Spanish?
Not very good.
So there's a twofold, ability for us to improve our supply for our customers and people in the North Okanagan.
Yes, the idea of being able to say to a producer who's mm-hmm. local, you have capacity to diversify in a particular way and mm-hmm. have the kind of it sounds like it's also relationship based.
Oh, 100%.
It's 100%. Yeah. Huge.
Yeah. So you're getting to know your producers, Mike. The kind of people that are involved with both Tappan Valley and Green Line, obviously they have to have some kind of personal skills. I mean, it's a relationship where you have to talk to them and they have to talk to you, and you have to work on a constructive relationship.
That's the base of it. The more that you get to know these people, you know they're involved in the community, you know they're down-to-earth people, and they are trying to do something that's good for the community. Mm-hmm. We back them 100% as much as we can. I mean, it's important to our economics, and it's important to people to be able to do that. We know we went through that deal when the Coca-Cola shut down.
Oh, yes.
All of a sudden, it's like, uh-oh, there's something wrong here, and we have to do something. And these people are looking forward to saying, okay, here we go.
Yes.
And if it can be done, which it seems to be, it's good for the community because, again, you're going to have green leaf, lettuces, tomatoes, onions, all that stuff that is available day in and day out, which I think is a good thing.
Now, Dave sort of made indirect mention of the fact that there's seasons, and seasons have an enormous effect on where food comes from.
Correct.
You also mentioned that a little bit. Maybe just talk about the percentage shift that goes on through the year from one season to another as to what you sell, but also where it comes from.
Okay, basically you're looking at October, November, basically your BC products and all that are starting to shut down or are shut down. You're starting to do the rotation into California. That goes straight up to February, March. Mm-hmm. And you're probably 90, 80% US-based products plus local is the other part. The thing that happens is nice, you'll start seeing probably the middle of March, maybe earlier, this year might be even earlier, is that the hothouses start up, BC starts running, you start planting, you start getting, you know, radishes and stuff like this, which come on. Once you hit that deal and you get into April, then your whole departments basically will start changing over and you'll see 90% local BC product or Alberta and not as much California.
And the local can be lots of different local producers. Dave, there's in the grocery outside just produce, there's a number of people around here who are starting to do that. In Armstrong, ASG, is it?
ASG is a local produce.
What does ASG stand for?
I don't know. Come on, you guys.
I think this is their business name, but
yeah.
They do. Alice,
is he big
Sam,
on root vegetables?
He's on root vegetables.
Mike?
Potatoes, yeah. Fingerling potatoes, carrots. He does a great job on carrots, potatoes, and he does melons, cantaloupes, stuff like that during the season. Does a really good job. So
it's interesting because we talked at the beginning of the show about how climate, the changes in the climate are really having a big effect. And it's this interesting, diverse mix of production systems. You know, indoors, say greenhouses, conventional greenhouses, and then there's these specialized systems like Tappan Valley and, mm-hmm. and Green Line. And then, of course, there are people who grow food outdoors, as we always have for, yeah. you know, thousands and millions of years.
We have a real good group of local people. During the summer, Henry Reimer, for example, is strawberries, asparagus. Mm. Number one thing in Salmon Arm, asparagus. We've got to have asparagus.
Yes.
So we used to have only one grower 10 years ago. Now, because of the trends, you have about six growers, main growers in this area that do a great job on asparagus and its availability. So that alone, garlic is another one, is huge.
I'm very aware of garlic.
used to be one grower. Yeah. You know, you get it there. Now there's 10 really good growers right in Salmon Arm that will supply you. So, I mean, it we're moving forward. We're getting more variety, right? So.
The provincial government has been talking a lot recently about adaptation. In other words, saying, okay, let's stop pretending that climate change isn't happening and is going to affect us. Let's just go with the flow. And what I think you're describing is that process of adaptation, not just by individual growers or individual farmers, but also by the systems that serve them. One of them, for example, and Dave, maybe you can, this probably affect you in the sort of overall grocery picture, and that is eggs and dairy.
Oh,
there's been some interesting changes. Why don't you describe them?
Yeah. Well, a big wake-up call was, as we talk about the Coca-Cola shutting down, the Princeton and even the Pemberton route all shut down.
I've got a picture of that long empty shelf in Derry.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
with Grassroots in the middle of it.
Yeah. So we've got Grassroots and we've got Jake DeWitt and his brother Chris DeWitt who are producing milk and processing it at the same time. And a nice development over the last year and a half was Chelsea Keenan with Keenan Farms down in Silver Creek. They now have an egg grader. So,
and explain to listeners what that really means.
That means a local egg supplier does not have to truck their eggs all the way down to the coast to get graded, trucked all the way back. We're talking time. We're not even going to get into the diesel, you know, that we're spewing, etc. But that it's able to happen right here. And if something like the atmospheric river happens again, we're going to have eggs on our shelves. We've got our eggs on sale this week at Askew's right now. And that shows you how much it works. You know, it's not just, let's carry some local product. This is a very, very real, relevant thing that Chelsea's doing out there with Keenan Farms.
And we were wondering whether they were having other egg producers get graded there.
I believe they are, Warren. You're going to probably have to check up with Chelsea and get her in the studio.
We will have
yeah.
her here.
But they also, you've been able to get Black Forest noodles at Askew's Foods for the last 20 years. And Keenan Farms now has Black Forest noodles. So your free-range soy-free eggs are now going to be in the Black Forest noodles. So it's a plus plus. It's just like something just got better.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is also pointing out the obvious absurdity of having food grown here, or, you know, eggs and dairy, and then firing it 400 kilometers down to the coast, and then firing it 400 kilometers back, just for a certification process, which is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Going to remind listeners once again that I'm speaking with Dave Wallace, who's the operations manager for Askew's Foods, and Mike Medwood, who's the produce coordinator as well. One other area where local stuff figures very prominently is in terms of chicken. Where do you get your chicken from, Dave?
I would have to say 98% of our chicken is grown locally. We've got, I don't want to guess how many local farms we have, right from Armstrong up through the Shuswap area. Mm-hmm. But we've got Colonial Farms processing in Armstrong, and we have Farmcrest up in Salmon Arm processing it. And we purchase off both those processors, and they are all supplied by local farmers.
Yeah.
Yep.
And one other food source, and that is frozen bread dough. Why don't you talk about Okanagan frozen bread dough? Because that's been a, if not a game changer, it's certainly adjusting the game quite a bit.
It's funny, you don't realize how valuable something is until you have a problem somewhere else. right now, the commercial bread suppliers for our stores, I would say I'm less than impressed with the availability. We put them on ads, our shelves are empty, they're not getting it here on a regular basis. But all five of our stores have either a scratch bakery or are baking bake-off, which is it's pre-made, it comes frozen, we proof it and bake it, and it's fantastic product. Mm-hmm. So when our larger Canada-wide suppliers are letting us down, as we talk about, we're able to have Okanagan frozen bread dough supply us with product, whether it's through Snowcap Foods or for AG Foods out of Calgary. We're getting that product, and it's there's local employees, and it's a local plant right in Armstrong, BC. So we are, if there's another atmospheric river, we're going to have bread on the shelves, you know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the whole point of what we're talking about, and why local food. Food, what they call food security and food sovereignty, which are kind of similar, but it's basically the idea that we have some control over the food supply in our area. Now, Mike, obviously produce is extraordinarily sensitive. Even with all the innovations we've just talked about, there is also, most of the food is still grown in the ground outdoors in
Correct.
Some fashion
Yes.
or something like that. Let's talk about another aspect of produce, and that is something that's moving forward quite a lot these days, and that is organics, the whole world of organics, which it's got variations to it. Some people just say we don't use sprays. Some other people go the whole road of getting certified. How do you see that moving? What is the trends in sort of organics versus conventionally raised stuff?
It's a tough one. There's a lot of people who, like you said, stand by organics. They only go with organics. Mm. The other advantage is that in our stores, we do offer as much organics as we can to help, you know, our customer base. What happens to us in the organic trend is that most of that coming from California again or Mexico or whatever. When we get into our summertime basics and stuff like that, the nice thing about the vegetable market is that a lot of our stuff is grown between Vernon and Abbotsford and Surrey. So it's based on it's a local product anyway. So the nutrients and the growing is a lot different than down in the States. So there's a trend where you'll find organic people will change over to that product because they know like a Salmon Arm product or like you said, again, we're back into like Green Lion and the new produce stripe. I mean, they're going to be a lot better off, and you're going to probably see organics. I mean, don't quote me on this, but you might see a trend where they will slip off a bit because people are getting more aware and more comfortable with these new growing procedures.
Sure. And some of which are not using a lot of agrochemicals.
That's right. I mean, these processes are basically water based. There's no sprays. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff nowadays, when you see organics, you'll see organics. Yes, it's certified. They go through a certain trend of 5-7 years to get their licensing and stuff like that. Where you see products now coming out, it'll come out as pesticide free or no spray. That product is also, you know, being advertised that way because people are aware of that.
Sure.
Another good thing is too, is if, I mean, I don't know if we talked about this before, but a lot of boxes that if you're buying produce and you're looking at a box, if it comes in a box, will have a QR code on it.
Sure.
If you scan that QR code, you'll be surprised what information and beans that are set up in there. In the Mexican product that they bring in, if you scan that, it'll give you the time, the place, the area it was picked, and when it was picked.
Hmm.
So you have, you know, people are looking for this knowledge.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
I want to know where it is or what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, they have that opportunity to do that. And that trend is starting to move forward. There are going to be more and more of this availability to know where your food is coming from.
And do people talk to you or to your staff saying, you know, I'd like to know more about this food, or I want something more specific so I know what I'm doing?
Yes, it is. And I mean, a lot of our tags and advertise we used to do is it would give you a point of origin.
Yes.
So, you know, the local concept, when they advertise, you get people advertising, yes, it's local, but I've always found you say local, but where's local? Like, does that go from the Alberta border to Vancouver? Because that's a BC product, as we're referring. And you'll find in our stores, it'll say, we have stickers that'll say BC, or we have stickers that say local. Well, you know that local is coming from your area.
Yes.
So not from Vancouver. And that's the way we've kind of set up. And it's been a really good process. And people are aware and they trust where they're getting their stuff from.
And they want to know.
They want to know.
Yeah. I remember talking with Andrea Gunner about the development of food for everybody. It was sort of a U.S. policy. Gerald Butts was the Secretary of the Interior, and it was sort of a good thing to make sure everybody had food that was inexpensive. And inexpensive meant if you could sell it cheaper, then you got more business, and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. But quality took a hike in some cases. Now it's almost like the public is wakening up. They're starting to see there's more to food than just it's there on the table and it fills your tummy. So do you, Dave, again, looking at sort of the bigger picture, do you see people getting, I wouldn't say fussier, but more discriminating? They're sort of more thoughtful about the food.
I think they're getting more educated all the time. Yeah. On the product, whether it's produce or whether it's our meat departments, where is the pork coming from, the chicken coming from, the beef, and also, okay, if I want this level of product, they might have to pay for it, and a lot of them have no problem with that, you know, because as you just alluded to, sometimes mass production, that will get you the price, but it might not get you the quality or where you're comfortable purchasing it from.
Yeah. It is an education process. When you're watching this happen, Mike, do people ask you different kinds of questions, say now, than they would have 20 or 30 years ago?
All the time.
You know, it's wonderful to have you guys. I just want to tell you, because you've had such long experience in this.
Do you remember, I look at my mom's cupboard back when I was 10, and there was always 10 cans of mushrooms in the cupboard.
Always.
Now we don't sell cans of mushrooms like we used to. They're in the produce departments. They're buying white mushrooms.
Yeah, they're buying white mushrooms. They're buying
or whatever.
Fresh mushrooms.
Yeah. You have these giant mushrooms. Like one mushroom's sort of a meal, right?
Well, and the thing is that the variety of mushrooms that are out there right now, I mean, you got to wait. I mean, yeah, the devastation of the fires last year, that is huge. But guess what? The bonus on that,
this is the mushroom.
Morale mushrooms will be coming up. And lots of people wait
this
for that.
This, folks, is not a justification for wildfires, just in case you're thinking we're saying they're a good thing. But it's true, isn't it?
Yes.
That's when the harvesters go out.
So right after, it's usually a year, 2 years after the fires, your morale mushrooms really grow. There'll be an influx of people up here, and it'll be just unreal. So.
Yes, I know some mushroom pickers. And it's a bit of a dog-eat-dog world, yes. Because it's, you know, you go out and you know your special place and you don't want anybody else to know about it. It's a challenging thing. Dave, talk about the organic, all-organic market, because it's something that's part of organics in general, but it's also something that was really, it's a historical event to have it outside a, you know, sort of more standard grocery operation. Talk about how it started and how it's worked out.
Well, I'll start with the end. It's worked out fantastic.
You know, that's good.
And then, you know, there was discussion. Why are we having, you know, product available in our parking lot? We're not making any profits or anything off. Yeah. And as a community initiative, it was fantastic. You got all these organic growers coming together.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that brought on the people who enjoy that lifestyle. But they still have to come into the store for an organic lemon. You know, the locals aren't growing organic lemons yet. I will say yet,
yes.
You know, because as our conversations are going today. But no, it's just fantastic, actually, to support those local growers. Because as we talk about food initiatives and keeping supply up, we are very happy to help them succeed.
Yep. And initially, I recall Herman Louise Bruns, who are the sort of proponents for the organic market, were kind of hesitant. They thought they'd end up in a faraway corner of the parking lot because they didn't think they wanted to interrupt everything because nobody would be coming to buy their stuff.
Yeah.
And it's been not only for them a revelation and a very positive turn of events, but there's sort of mutual cross-fertilization between the organic market and, as you said, your store.
Of course.
I noticed it a lot busier on market days Askew's.
No, it's a Wednesdays. It's a great partnership.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We've got the customers coming there, and great. I've got all this organic, locally produced product right 20 feet from the door.
Mike, you had some comments about that. What do you see the impact and say on produce? I mean, both in terms of what people want and also in terms of what they can get right outside your store and in your store.
Well, I think the deal is that it's a positive movement because these people can shop their organics, which is good. They also come in the store and see what we have for organics. They can do comparisons. Again, and when we're in the summertime, what you're selling out there, we could have in the store. Pricing has a little bit of difference with it, but I mean, even so, it just brings people together more. They actually, if you're out there and you're at the market and you're going through the market and seeing the people and talking to the customers and talking to these people, it's like a congregation. They're all together and they're mulling together and they're talking about food and, you know, food quality and stuff. Yeah, and I mean, their quality, it's top bench because you know it's getting picked that morning or that night and it's brought to the market. And there you go.
I
think it's a great thing for Askew's. I mean, it's a great thing for the organic trade also.
Yeah, it's as a physician and a doctor being interested in the effect of food on people's health, I can certainly qualify the issue that with respect to pesticide ingestion, for example, and there's been a lot of public relations around pesticides, and you know they're perfectly safe, especially glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. But increasing evidence shows first that the pesticides aren't as benign as we used to think they were. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that when you eat organics, there was a study done in Seattle where children were given their regular food. That was either one group. Kids were giving organic and the other kids were giving conventional stuff and they all ate the same food. It's just that where they were grown in different ways. And the kids who ate the organic had something like 85 to 90% less pesticide residues in their urine. That's how they tested. They got them to pee in a jar and then measured how much pesticide metabolites was in their urine. And it was quite dramatic. And this was done 15 years ago. And now with more efficient, you know, growing conditions and that kind of thing, I think it's starting to be realized that I know you use the word lifestyle, Dave, about an organic lifestyle. It's now something that is scientifically grounded. You know, it maybe started out initially as people wanting to do it because it mattered to them. Now I think the evidence is becoming clear that the differences are significant.
You'll find that another comparison is that if you take an organic banana and you take a regular banana and you give it to a customer and you get them to try them, comparably, there is no comparable. They are totally different, taste, texture, and just the flavor. I mean, carrots the same way. Organic carrots, even the local stuff that we get here, we get organic from Armstrong and stuff like that. That organic carrot tastes and is so much better than a regular conventional carrot.
You know, it's a very interesting point, and there's actually a scientific grounding for that, and that is that when plants don't have pesticides to fight off the pest population, they have to grow their own. And many of the compounds that are in their flesh, their tissue, are the flavor compounds. And so they grow the compounds that give them more flavor because they have to. And that's why, in fact, that's probably how the first carrot was eaten by the first human. It was like, it was tasty because it had all these flavor compounds. Now, I'm going to remind listeners once again that I'm speaking with Dave Wallace, Operations Manager, and Mike Medwid, who's the Produce Coordinator for Askew's Foods. Now, Mike, one of the things that you're also responsible for is telling the community about what's available in the store, advertising what you produce.
Correct.
What has changed in the 40 years that we're the span of time we're talking about in terms of sharing information about what you have available in your store? What there must have been a sea change, a vast alteration in what's going on.
I think just the basic more information, more availability, and we do a lot more research than we used to. You didn't have to, but it was there. Now you have to really research these companies out, research what's available. Timing, again, Mother Nature comes into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, be prepared this year for peaches and cherries are going to be a little bit devastated again because of, you know, we had that warm spell. We had a green Christmas. All of a sudden, plants are saying, hey, and
time
they start budding out.
Yes.
And then it got cold. So there's going to be another stress on that fruit variety. Getting pricing is huge. Because a lot of these places, I mean, with costs, and people don't seem to realize that. I mean, a box that say that carries a vine tomato, for example, you know, back 10 years ago or 15 years ago, that box was 50 cents. So that reflected your price of your product. Now that box costs anywhere from $1.50 to $2. So, and it's used once. So this is why we're seeing these price increases also is because of food costs and fertilizers and just maintenance and wear and tear and equipment and all this sort of stuff. So when we do an ad program or whatever, I mean, there's certain criteria that you stay within corporate stores and all this to have a certain deal. They advertise so many items and stuff like that. Myself, when I'm doing this program, I like to think outside of the box. What are people looking for now and what is available? And we're very fortunate because we can change and move stuff within 7 days. Where corporates and stuff like that have done their ads 2 and 3 weeks in advance. So if market changes or you end up like in Oxnard, California, and you get 2 inches of rain for 4 days, guess what? There's no product available. So we really are on top of that. And I think that's important to the people because all of a sudden they'll say, oh, hey, don't you usually have cherries at this time? Well, okay, here they are. So as soon as we have it, it's in our stores and people know about it.
What's striking to me is the turnover time that is necessary because of the produce.
You're correct, yes.
It doesn't last forever.
It don't last. And I mean, it's here now.
Yeah.
You take advantage of it and it's gone. Like it runs, you know, asparagus, for example. When we got it, everybody would love to eat that stuff year round. But you know what? We got a 6 to 8 week window.
Yes.
And it's here and that's it.
But you know, isn't that an ancient pattern in human life that we eat what's in season? We don't eat, You know, we've got accustomed to the fact that you can eat lemons.
We're spoiled.
We're spoiled. Yep. You are spoiled that way because traditionally, yes, when the winter came, traditionally years ago, we used to eat row crop.
Yes,
that was it. It was the potatoes, the onions, the turnips, the carrots, and stuff like that. Now we're spoiled because, hey, we can go out and get whatever we want as far as fruit and vegetables.
So are people coming to you and saying, looking for the stuff that's in season a little bit more self-consciously, not so, you know, I want my pomelos and I want them now.
Yep.
More like, we got beautiful apples in this part of the world.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
Is that kind of awareness, do you sense it percolating through the community, this kind of awareness?
As Dave said, our people are way more aware of what's going on. They're more knowledgeable on timings and dates. Like I said, if you miss asparagus and they'll come in and say, well, is asparagus ready yet? Because they know the grass is growing, so they know that, you know, it's getting close.
Yeah.
So they're on top of this stuff. So they won't let you sleep, that's for sure. It's which is a good thing. It keeps
Dave,
us positive, right?
Talk about not sleeping.
Grab it when you can. But I think we also keep our customers up to date of the seasons, like the asparagus ad. There's the strawberry ad.
So
there's
you
the
tell
root vegetables
people
ad.
What's it's going here. On?
It's coming, you know. And in our flyer, we do have, like Mike mentioned, the BC sticker, the local sticker. And so our customers are aware. Oh, yep, the Madalea blueberries are coming into season here. Love them; they're big and juicy.
Yeah.
Our Facebook page, it's there. It'll say, okay, in our stores today, you know, we've got it. It's here.
Do you get a lot of traffic in your Facebook page?
Oh yes, I believe we do. Yeah. I know we can track it, and the odd time we do see how many hits, links, shares. Yeah, yeah. But people are still glued to their phones, whether that's a good thing or not.
Certainly, the people who are in the organic market talk about this a lot, about the fact that people are asked, they want to know what's going on. They don't want to just buy sort of blindly. And I think that really applies across the board, and that's what we're talking about now, that how people want
information.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about another aspect of growing that I know both of you participate in, because I actually asked you before the show, and that's gardening. And the funny thing about gardening is, of course, people grow stuff in their own yard or in their own property. But actually, it increases their awareness of food, and it also makes them more discriminating. Dave, you have a garden.
Well, my wife has a garden.
Oh, well, of course. Thank you for that honest reply.
I better throw that in there or I'll be in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. And talk about gardening as a guy who spends all day dealing with food.
The last 2 years, I would say we probably doubled the output of our garden at home.
Mm-hmm.
And the cherry tomatoes, for some reason, 2 years ago, they wouldn't grow at all.
Yes.
And last year, our tomato crop was twofold over the most part.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got family, by all means. We're dropping off zucchinis and peppers, hot peppers, tomatoes to my parents' place as we can. And we see that more. I think last year we really noticed it. And I reached out to my friends in the grocery community saying, hey, you know, how was your produce sales at the end of August, middle of August? And everybody's were down. And the side conversations were that the gardens were up. The local, not even the big, but the farm gate, not necessarily the farmer's market people, but the farm gates. I'm watching on social media. Hey, swing by. We've got heads of lettuce, cauliflower, broccoli, a buck, which is fantastic. They're getting a local product. They're all meeting at the caboose in Armstrong. I believe it's Monday nights. I'm winging it here, where you bring your produce down that you have left over and come and get it. And so that shows you that people are willing to get out there and till some soil and grow some good food.
Well, they're starting to pinch their pennies because, you know, it costs money. And you local produce departments and you go into produce and the prices are high. And if you're growing your own, I mean, hey, it's a win-win too. But
you know, it's like with the organic market, I don't know if you had any discussions about maybe it's going to take customs away from us. But, you know, it's something that I would have thought about. He said, well, God, they are going to go out and buy their organics out there. But in fact, it's actually enhanced your business. And it seems to me that gardening sort of has the same role. It makes people think about food.
I think what the organic market has done is it's increased variety. I'm avid on variety. I love variety. I mean, if you come into a store and you've got blueberries on ad, you will have a choice of six other varieties of blueberries, which means you get more customers. Sure. And those customers are going to look at your departments and see, hey, these guys are doing something, because they're given not only I want this blueberry, but this other customer says I can't handle that much. So they got a smaller package. So, I mean, it's avid that we give these customers that choice. And once you get generating people coming through your store and they get to trust you on what you're doing, it's a win-win again for the community.
A lot of people have come on the show, have talked about knowing your producer, knowing your vendor, knowing the person as a person, in addition to what they do as in their work. Maybe we can talk a little bit about, just we're getting close to the end of the show, but I'm thinking about the different stores. Now you got five stores. If I got the right?
Yeah, one handful, that's right.
One handful. A big handful.
It's a handful.
It's a handful.
Do you see, David, do you see sort of a different demographic for each of the stores? They have a different, you know, people like some things in one area or one store, but they, in another store, they go for something else.
Oh, we do. Yes. Our Armstrong location has the highest meat percentages of store sales. Whether you want to say Armstrong's got much more meat eaters, but but compared to our other stores, we have a great meat department in all our stores.
Sure.
And but Armstrong, they really enjoy their meat. Mm-hmm. The Uptown store, I would say, Mike, that the customers on a regular basis would be more inclined to purchase the organic options, the natural options.
They're more,
we've got a great wellness department.
They're a little more sort of picky.
They're more picky, yeah. And I mean, it's the same as a downtown store. I mean, it's set up more as a senior-based.
Sure.
It's a market shop.
You're in, you buy your two or three items for supper that night, and you're gone.
Yeah.
Uptown store, again, is more family-oriented, more groceries, more fuller buggies and stuff like this. So,
And we've kind of worked that downtown store where the price point is more acceptable, a lower price point, whether it's a smaller portion. We've got a great Josh in our deli down there. Right. He's making a wonderful product up front, your muffins and things, and soups and sandwiches. Mm. He probably sells more sandwiches than any other location. And the store itself isn't as big.
And a little area where you can have a soup and a sandwich is...
Oh, yeah, that's getting used more all the time, the patio up front. So those sandwich sales, for example, are a higher percentage than any of our locations. I think some days he says he's over 100 sandwiches a day going through.
My goodness.
That's huge.
Yeah. And in the Enderby store, no, it's in the Armstrong store, you have customer-initiated or controlled checkout.
Self-checkouts.
Yeah.
Yes. Remember the name. I'd love to talk about self-checkouts.
Well, we may have a new show, but okay. Briefly, is it doing
It's doing very well. We went to the seminar, Lori, the store manager, and myself in Vancouver. Yeah. They said, you are not your average customer any longer who doesn't want self-checkouts. I want to talk to somebody. No, there's customers nope, I want in. I've got the average ring is $35 and seven items. Mm. They don't want to stand behind $200 buggies to get through the line.
They went in and they went out.
Yep.
To speak on behalf of your staff, who man or woman or
bless
person,
them.
I getting to know them in the Uptown store, which is closest to us, I love talking to a person. So for all of you out there who like talking to persons, you're okay.
We still have checkouts in all our stores.
We still have checkout people, and it is kind of a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
How is the store in Enderby doing?
It's constantly evolving. Next Wednesday, we actually are taking out, if you come in the front of the store, we've got big old-fashioned cooler doors, and that's all, when we purchased the store, that what was there for our deli department. Mm-hmm. And equipment, we talk about availability of food. Equipment was 8 months off pulling those great big doored cooler units out that have our salads and sandwiches. Next Wednesday, we're very happy to have a new line of coolers going in, traditional deli bakery lineup, you know, full serve. I'll take 200 grams of your Black Forest, please, or I'll pick up a pack of some Tanto latte cheese.
So it's evolving.
You know, so it's evolving, and it's always a challenge. Yep.
Mike, you have a garden too?
I'm afraid I don't.
You don't. My garden
is uptown.
Well, there's a lot there. So. Look, it's wonderful to have had you both in the studio today to just give us an overview of a lot of the things that are playing into the availability and the quality of food in this part of the world, and the trend, which I think is very, very constructive and positive and attuned to the future, which is to have as much local, high-quality food available to your customers and to all of us who are those customers, on a regular and a constant and expanding basis. So thank you very much to both of you for being here.
Thanks for having us. It's always a good time.